Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual for our Sunday morning show. And as you know, well, the football now with the Super Bowl, that's all over, and I think everybody's seen enough of football. Basketball is still with us, and there'll be a few games on the tube today. But everybody now is beginning to think, well, now the Super Bowl is over, baseball will soon be here. And that really is the thought of behind our show today, because our guest today is an old friend of mine, the hero of the World Series, the great shortstop of the New York Yankees, Bucky Dent. And we have many, many things to talk about with Bucky. And as you know, he's part of a great ball club, that New York Yankee team. You can't take it away from him. I've just been looking at his two World Series rings, the one from last year, the one from the year before, and there'll be one coming up again for the next year, because they look to me like they have one of the best teams ever put together. So our guest today will be Bucky Dent, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have the great shortstop of the New York Yankees, the hero of the World Series. Bucky Dent is our guest today. I was telling you in the car that when you hit that home run in the playoffs against the Boston Red Sox, I happened to be in a lounge. In fact, it was at a bar with three or four guys, and they all had bets on Boston, and I had a bet on the Yankees because of you. Well, when you hit that ball, it turned out to be a home run and eventually won that game. I got so excited, I knocked all the drinks off the bar. And these guys were wild-eyed. They didn't think the ball was going to go out. But I've seen a lot of balls go out in Boston, and when that ball was hit, I figured it was gone. That has to be one of your great thrills with the Yankees.
It was. The ball I hit in Boston is probably one of the biggest hits I'll ever get in my career, because it did put us into the playoffs and eventually put us into World Series. But it's a game that I think is one of the classical games in history. And I think half the world was in bars that day watching that ball game, because everybody I talked to says that they were in some lounge somewhere and that the whole town went crazy. And I would have loved to seen the pictures of the bars when that ball fell into the net, because I know a lot of money was won on that ball game.
Well, I really got a kick out of that. Boy, of all the thousands of games that I broadcast, and I had a lot of thrills in a lot of them, I really got a thrill out of that, and I was so happy for your performance. Now, as you look back, you fellas went into Boston and during the season. You were trailing by 4 in Boston, in Fenway Park, and you beat them 4 straight, and that is referred to now as the Boston Massacre.
That's right. I think that was the biggest one series of the whole year. We felt that if we could get close to Boston after coming from 14 games back, that if we could get within 3 or 4 games of them with about 10 or 12 games of play, that we would beat them. And we actually went into Boston thinking that if we split, we were in good shape. We'd still stay 4 out, and we'd have 10 or 12 games to still catch them. But after the first night, we beat them 12-2. Catfish started the ball game, and he left after the fourth inning. He never did get the win. We felt then that there was a little uneasiness by the Red Sox, and we felt that we weren't going to just go in there and try and beat them 2, that we were going to try to beat them 3 out of 4, and it wound up that we swept them, and it turned out to be probably the biggest series of the whole year.
You remember the totals? You said they were featured in a Boston paper.
It was the most unbelievable thing that I've ever seen in baseball, because they did have the totals for the game, for the 4-game series, and it was something like we outscored them 60-12 and out-hit them something like 65-15. It was the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen.
Well, having broadcast many games in Boston, I know that is a tough park for visitors to go in and win.
I think the most amazing thing about the whole situation was that out of probably the 60 or 65 hits that we got, we only had one home run and I think maybe one double. I think 59 of them were singles. And, you know, usually when you go into Fenway, somebody's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And I think Lou Piniella was the only guy to hit a home run that series. It was just that we went in there and everybody just started to swing the bat well, and we didn't even worry about the wall, because over the course of the 2 years that I've been with New York, the Yankees have not played well in Fenway Park at all. I mean, we've gone up there the year before, and it was the Yankee Massacre. They set an all-time season record for hitting home runs in a 3-game series. I think they hit 21 in three games, and I got shell shocked that day, man. I tell you, I was just hoping they wouldn't hit one at me, and I think we finally got it, you know, got even with them.
Well, that's a great park, you know, but it's one of my favorite places to see a ball game. There's something about it, the action, the fans are so close, the place is small, and still they pack in 2 million people.
Well, they have a super ballpark to play in. I mean, if I had to switch teams and go to another team, I'd love to play in Fenway Park because they have good fans up there, and the atmosphere is so good. And I know when New York goes in there, the rivalry is so heated up that the fans really get involved. And I know the Monday game that we played in Fenway Park is going to be one of the all-time classical ball games because we weren't supposed to be able to beat them in Fenway Park. And we went up there. It was a well-played game. There was no errors involved, and it came right down to the last out, and we beat them 5-4. And I tell you, over the year, it had to come down that way to a playoff game between Boston and New York because it was just a fantastic year, them jumping out to a big lead, and then the last 2 weeks, we lose the last day of the season. It was just one of the all-time years for baseball, I think.
Well, it was really exciting. Bucky, you referred to Hunter starting the first game. Catfish is a very, very good friend of mine. I noticed last year he was used more or less as a spot pitcher. What has he lost from his Oakland years?
Well, I tell you, Catfish has had arm problems for about a year and a half, and they actually didn't find out what was wrong with his shoulder until about the middle part of the year, and they performed an operation, or it's not an operation, but it was a new technique that I think they once used on Joe Namath, where over the course of the year, you build up so much scar tissue in your shoulder that you have to break the adhesions down. So what they did was they took Catfish in the hospital and they put him to sleep and they put him on the operating table and they put a steel ball in his hand, and it actually, you know, he's under, you know, some kind of anesthesia or something, and they force his arm back and it pops and it breaks all the adhesions and it frees his shoulder to where he can get the movement back. And the day that he did it, he came out of the hospital and he started throwing, and he came back to be the old Catfish Hunter. And that's what that was his big turnaround.
The marvelous guy to watch pitch, isn't he?
I tell you, Catfish was one of the all-time class guys. I mean, when Catfish Hunter pitches, you know that when he walks out on the mound that he's going to give you 100%, and even if he's hurting, he's going to go out there and pitch for you. And I tell you, it seems like you just want to do everything you can to help the guy win.
You know, I really think that for a fan to really enjoy a game, I mean, as an announcer, I used to get involved to that degree, that when Catfish would pitch, I would watch him and watch what he'd do and how he'd hit the corners and try to think what he was thinking. And man alive, I tell you, he's ahead of the hitters all the time.
He's a master. I mean, he's like a magician on the mound. He goes out there. He knows what he wants to do with the ball. I mean, he just doesn't go out there and throw. He knows what he wants to do with it, and he does it. He's got great control. He's a great competitor. He gives up a lot of home runs, but he gives them up in situations where, like, he's ahead 7-2, and he's just trying to get the game over and throwing strikes. But when it comes down to a situation where he's got to get you out, he's the best I've seen as far as bearing down.
I thought the Yankees made a great move in getting Teon from Boston. It's not only the move that you get a great experienced pitcher and a winner like Teon who can win the big ball games, but psychologically, it had to hurt the fans in Boston. I was surprised that the Red Sox would make a deal like that.
I was very surprised, too. When they started talking about getting Teon from Boston, I never thought that Boston would let him go. But apparently they felt that he didn't have too many more years, and they were going to give a young guy a chance to pitch. But I think George Steinbrenner made one of the smartest moves I've ever seen in baseball, because Louis Teon is going to give something to the Yankees. He's going to give us a good 10 or 15 wins. And when you take that away from Boston, which they felt that Teon was their stopper, then you're taking a lot away from them.
And the addition of Tommy John, who's a terrific pitcher, and boy, he can really keep that ball down, make that ball sink.
Well, he's a tremendous competitor. Playing against him the 2 years in the World Series, he never gives in to the hitter. And he stays with what he has to do as far as trying to keep the ball down. He never really gives you a real good pitch to hit. And I think in New York with Teon and Tommy John that they're going to win a lot of ball games, especially Tommy John, because he throws a sinker, and now he doesn't have to worry about them hitting the ball out of the ballpark. I think last year he only gave up a total of 11 home runs. and I think only two of them were to right-handers anyway. So in New York, he's not going to have to worry about that anyway.
Your man Goodrey had a fantastic year. What was it, 25-3 or 4?
I think his final record was 25-3. But Ron Guidry is right now the premier pitcher in baseball. I mean, he's got it all. I mean, he throws as hard as anybody. He's got great control, and he's a tremendous competitor.
You know, you left the White Sox, and unfortunately, the White Sox have never been able to replace you. A shortstop, a second baseman, a center fielder, and a good young catcher. It's hard when you're planning a team to trade away any of those four positions. The point I wanted to make was that the Yankees really have that with Randolph now at second base. You and he really get work together beautifully. This kid is really a terrific ball player.
He's an outstanding ball player. I think that Willie is if not the best, he's right there among all second basemen in baseball. He's young enough. He's quick. He covers a lot of ground. He's easy to play with because, you know, he gets rid of the ball, something like George did over in Chicago. But he's just an outstanding athlete, and I hope that we have a lot of years left with New York.
Yes. Now you have strength back at the plate with Munson, who is a fine receiver and a very dangerous hitter.
Well, Thurman is one of he's one of the best ball players I've ever played with. You know, people criticize him and they talk about him, but when he goes out on the field, he gives you 100%, and he plays as hard as anybody. And you got to have these kind of people if you're going to be a championship ball club. He's not afraid to go into second base and break up the double play, and it shows when he plays that he's a tough, hard-nosed ball player. And there's no doubt about it that he's one of the biggest reasons that the Yankees are a championship team.
How are you in center field with Rivers?
Well, Mickey has his problems every now and then. He gets a little lackadaisical, but when Mickey Rivers wants to play, I've got to say that he could be the most valuable player in our league every year if he really went out and wanted to play. He's got more ability than anybody I've seen.
Tell you one thing about that guy. He's a tough little out.
He's a tough little out. He is actually the key to the Yankees. He makes the Yankees go. When Mickey Rivers wants to play, he does it all. He can bunt. He can steal bases. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And he's a good center fielder. He can't throw the ball real well, but he makes up for that by getting rid of it. And like I said before, Mickey Rivers could be the most valuable player in our league.
They say the Yankees are now the last of the bidders for Rod Carew. Where do you see him playing there?
Well, if they get Rod Carew, I would say that he'd play first base. I think they're talking about giving up Chambliss, who I'd hate to see go because he's a steady ball player. He's consistent. He makes the big plays. And I'd hate to see Chris Chambliss go, but George is got it in his mind that he wants Rod Carew, and I think that they would have to give up Chambliss if they're going to get him. But he would probably play first base.
Well, he certainly, with his hitting ability, he's probably the best hitter in baseball now.
Oh yeah, he's the best hitter right now in baseball. I mean, he does it all at the plate. He can hit the ball the other way. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And if he plays in New York every day, he could hit 25 or 30 home runs.
Yeah. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, gives you the baseball feeling to talk with Bucky Dent, the World Series hero and the shortstop of the New York Yankees. And we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Touch on before our time is ended. One is you were there and you're an important cog in the Yankee machine. One is the transition period between Billy Martin and Bob Lemon. What was the team feeling? How serious was the Martin problem there? And what do you feel that Lemon really contributed in that time? We all know, all fans all know, but let's start with that first.
Well, I think first you got to start with the differences in managers. Bob Lemon is a very low-key type of a manager, and Billy Martin is a fiery type of manager. I mean, Billy shows his emotions. He kicks helmets in the dugout, and he screams and yells. So the differences between them is very obvious. And when Billy left our ball club, I got to admit, we had a lot of injuries. and we had a lot of problems at the time, and I think they all come from the injuries that we had. You know, when the Red Sox were playing so well, you can't challenge a team like that if you have five or six or seven guys out of the lineup like we had. We had at one time Munson, myself, Randolph, Rivers, Gullett, Catfish, and you can't expect to challenge a team like that. And I think that Billy got a lot of bad ink because of that. But as far as Bob Lemon coming in, I think what Bob did is he came in and settled the ball club down by saying, hey, Reggie, we need your bat. And he gave some of the younger pitchers that we had, like Beattie and Clay, he gave them an opportunity to pitch and showed a little bit of confidence in them. And anytime a guy shows you a little bit of confidence, you're going to respond to it. And that's what happened.
Well, it certainly was a remarkable drive you fellas put on.
Well, Bob Lemon is a remarkable guy. I mean, he doesn't, you know, he just sits there and watches the ball game. He's a guy that, you know, he commands a lot of respect from you. And, you know, if you make a mistake, he's not shy enough to say, you know, hey, you know, he'll come right out and tell you that you made a mistake. And I think that most of the guys on our ball club really respect Bob, and they want to play for Bob Lemon. The question's been asked, is Billy Martin coming back in 1980? Well, I think the only guy that can really answer that is George Steinbrenner. I think that they have a verbal agreement that Billy would come back in 1980, and I think the whole world's waiting to see if Billy Martin is going to manage the New York Yankees again.
You know, as one of the important cogs in the Yankee machine, everything was so upset in that period. You really visualize that the Yankees would go for another chapter, that sort of thing?
I really don't know. My honest feelings is that I think that Billy, if another job was offered to him, he says he wants to manage in New York, that, you know, the Yankees is his team, and he's always loved playing in New York, and he loves managing the Yankees. But, you know, I just feel that that if a job has been offered to him in another town, I don't think Billy can stay out of baseball that long. I think he loves it too much, and I would really feel that he might take another job somewhere else.
Well, there are many good sides to Billy Martin, I'd like to say that. I've known him a long time. I had him as a guest many, many times. He never turned me down on anything. He certainly is not all bad.
He's not all bad, and I think that you got to give Billy Martin one thing. Everywhere he goes, he wins. He came to New York, and he taught the Yankees how to win. He brought the Yankees back to where they are, the class of baseball again, and you can't knock the guy for that. He has his ins and outs with the press and some of the players sometimes, but Billy Martin's a winner, and wherever he goes, he's going to win. And you just can't knock the guy, you know, for trying to win.
I have a hunch on my own that Sparky Anderson will be the next manager of the Yankees.
Well, that's rumored. I've heard several people say that they're thinking about Sparky Anderson maybe taking over for our Bob Lemon, because Bob is going to retire after this year. I'd like to see Bob go out with another World Championship team, because he deserves everything. He's a super guy. As far as Sparky Anderson, I've heard a lot of good things about him, and I heard that the Yankees were interested in getting him.
The other question that I wanted to ask you about, you know the old thing about the pressure cooker and a ball player playing under pressure and so on and so forth. The pressure of the World Series must be a unique type of pressure.
It's different. I tell you, Bob, I've got to say that the ball game in Fenway Park is the most pressure I've ever experienced in my athletic career. I mean, I've never experienced anything that's close to that game, because if you lose in Fenway, you go home, and that's not where it's at. Your whole year is to start to go to the playoffs and to the World Series. And if you lose, you've played 162 ball games just to go home. You've played one extra game. And I got to say that game is the most pressure I've ever experienced. We went on to the playoffs in the World Series, but the pressure couldn't even come close. I think the only time that the pressure could have matched the Fenway game is if we'd have won seven games and went maybe 14 or 15 innings to win over, you know, the whole world thing, the World Championship. But as far as pressure, that was it.
Can you sense it while you're playing in a ball game like that your teammates are sharing the feeling you have?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, and everybody knows that in a ball game like that, if you make a mistake, you're going to lose. And nobody wants to make a mistake. Nobody wants to be a goat. And I tell you what, I think Rich Gossage, what I saw on his face that day when he came in and he gave up a couple base hits and they brought the score to 5-4, I don't think that there's anybody in the whole wide world could feel the pressure that Rich Gossage had on him when a man on first and third, two outs in Fenway Park, 5-4, and Carl Yastrzemski hitting.
Hey,
I tell you what, I felt it myself.
You should have heard us yelling in that bar.
I tell you what.
These guys all thought, well, this is going to do it, you know, these Boston guys.
You know, I have to admit, for the first time in my career, when Yastrzemski was up, I'm standing there thinking, God, don't hit that ball to me. Please, Pop. That's the best thing he could have done was pop the ball up. Because I think there was 9 guys standing out there saying the same thing that I was. Don't hit it to me. And that's a bad feeling because, you know, as a kid, you dream of making a great play in a game to save a ball game. But I got to admit, you know, the only thing that was going through my head and in Fenway Park, and you couldn't see real good that day because of the shadows, is if he hits a ball on the ground and it takes a bad hop and I bobble it and they tie the game up, man, I'm going to be the most miserable guy in the world. And I tell you, I think everybody on the field felt the same thing.
Oh, what a relief. I couldn't believe it myself because I know his ability when that I saw him pop that ball up.
I tell you what, when he popped that ball up, it was just like they just lifted the whole ballpark off our shoulders because
who caught that ball?
Nettles. And I tell you what happened to me. I was standing there, and when the ball was popped up, I felt something come down my arm. You know, I felt like a spider was running down my arm, and I looked down, and the metal that I wear had broke. And so when I saw that Nettles was going to catch the ball, I started looking for the metal because I thought it fell out. And I never did get a chance to go run and jump on the guys, you know. And that's you play 163 games, and I'm worried about my metal and not worrying about enjoying this thing.
You know, when you speak about Nettles, you're talking about a pretty good ball player. I saw Brooks Robinson through all of his career. And I want to tell you this. This guy can not only hit the ball out of the park, he's developed into one of the best third basemen I've ever seen.
You know, people didn't really realize what a third baseman he was until the World Series. But I play with him day in and day out, and he makes those plays all the time. I mean, it was nothing for him to dive and catch a ball like he did in the World Series. Like I say, he does that every day, and he is the best defensive third baseman in baseball. He's not afraid to make mistakes. He plays way off the line, and he'll give a guy a double, but he'll take 10 base hits away from him in the hole. And he's a smart third baseman. He plays much deeper than anybody I've ever seen, but he knows how to play the game, and he's not afraid to make mistakes.
No, he's a wonderful ball player. By the way, what about Gullett? Is he sound yet?
Gullett had arm surgery last year on his shoulder. He had a problem with his rotator cuff because he throws so hard and he throws across his body that they gave him surgery, and from what I understand, he's starting to throw a little bit now, and if he comes back, I can't even imagine what our pitching staff's going to be like. We have something like 7 starters.
Yeah, 6 potential 20-game winners.
Yeah, that's right. And if they could all win 20 games, we wouldn't have to worry.
You better find room for that third ring. It'll be along pretty soon. I can't see that being a contest, actually, in that division. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend, Bucky Dent, shortstop of the New York Yankees, hero of the World Series. We'll be back in just a moment. The big news, of course, in baseball is that Parker of Pittsburgh, leading hitter in the National League and a great ball player, signed his contract, a $4 million contract for 5 years, and there's a very good chance that next Sunday we will have his agent, Tom Rich, who also has 20 or 25 other ball players under his wing, as our guest on this program. Bucky, on balls that are hit, that are really tough balls to time and everything else, what's the difference between playing them off grass and off of AstroTurf?
Well, the biggest difference is on AstroTurf, you don't have to worry about the ball taking a bad hop. On the grass, you have some fields around the league that are terrible. I mean, Minnesota and Milwaukee are 2 fields that I hate to play on because you never know where the ball is going to go. And I think the biggest thing is in tight ball games, when you're playing on a bad field, you get a little tense because you don't want to make a mistake, yet you don't know where the ball is going. So the biggest difference between grass and artificial surface is on the turf, the ball gets to you much faster, but you don't have to worry about it taking a bad hop.
What is the difference from your point of view between playing a ball game in daylight, sunshine, and at night?
Well, I like to play at night. I see the ball much better at night. And again, you have some stadiums that the seats are down low, and when people are wearing white shirts on a Sunday or a Saturday afternoon, it's very hard to see the ball. And a lot of times you'll see a guy where he'll hesitate. It's because he doesn't see the ball. And I feel like I see the ball much better at night. A lot of guys prefer playing in the daytime.
Speaking of seeing, while you were enjoying your turkey at Christmas time, could you still see Yastrzemski popping that ball up?
I sure could, boy. Every bite that I took of that turkey, I could see that ball popped up. And I think I'll be seeing that for about 30 more years, I hope.
Well, it was a break certainly for you fellas. And as you said when we were coming out here, Carl Yastrzemski, one of the most dangerous hitters that ever lived.
I tell you what, Rich Gossage really showed his worth in that last inning, because he not only had to get Yastrzemski out, but he had to get Rice out in order. Rice, Yastrzemski. And when you get those two guys out, one and two, with men on base, then you've done something in Fenway Park. And I think the Goose, right after the ball game, I think that he felt like a deflated balloon when Yastrzemski popped that ball up, and I was really happy for him.
Yeah, I should say. Buck, I'm happy and delighted that you could be with us today, and I want to thank you very, very much for taking the time and the effort to be here. And I know the fans have enjoyed it as much as I.
Well, it's a real pleasure, Bob. I still feel like I got a big part of my heart here in Chicago. You know, this is where it all started for me, and I love to come back here and play, and I'm just very happy that I could come and help you out.
Thank you very, very much. Our guest today, Bucky Dent, World Series hero, shortstop of the world-famous, world-champion New York Yankees. And now this is Bob Elson saying, have a happy day, and we'll be with you next Sunday at the same time.